Today is Thursday, December 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump became only the third president ever to face impeachment Wednesday.
Speaker Pelosi's house just gave in to a temptation that every other house in our history has managed to resist.
Plus, Pakistan says India has deployed medium-range missiles in disputed Kashmir. And for the first time, the WHO reports the number of men smoking around the world has dropped. All those stories and more next. U.S. politicians and people around the world on Thursday are reacting to the impeachment of U.S. President Donald Trump. The Democratic-led majority of the U.S. House of Representatives voted to impeach Trump late Wednesday. Lawmakers passed charges that he abused power of the presidency to benefit himself politically by a 230-197 vote. The second article of impeachment that President Trump obstructed Congress's efforts to investigate him passed by a 229-198 vote. The historic vote fell almost entirely along party lines, sending the case for removing Trump from office to the U.S. Senate, which is controlled by the president's Republican Party. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Donald Trump, now the third president in 230 years of U.S. history to be impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi warning Democrats not to cheer the historic moment after acknowledging the seriousness of the vote earlier.
It is tragic that the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice.
The vote ends the House's divisive three-month investigation into the president that began with a whistleblower complaint alleging Trump held up nearly $400 million in congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine in return for a personal political favor from Ukraine's leader to investigate political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter, a move Democrats said endangered American democracy. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
In America, no one is above the law. Donald J. Trump sacrificed our national security in an effort to cheat in the next election. And for that, and his continued efforts to seek foreign interference in our elections, he must be impeached.
Speaking as lawmakers impeached him, Trump said the vote would ruin Democrats' political fortunes instead of his.
With today's illegal, unconstitutional, and partisan impeachment, the do-nothing Democrats, and they are do-nothing, all they want to do is focus on this, what they could be doing, are declaring their deep hatred and disdain for the American voter. This lawless partisan impeachment is a political suicide march for the Democrat Party.
Every single House Republican remained loyal to the president, arguing Democrats were trying to invalidate the results of the 2016 election. Republican Representative Doug Collins.
They can't actually pin anything of factual basis on him. The president did nothing wrong in this issue.
Polls show lawmakers aren't the only ones divided. Around 43% of the American public supports Trump, while around half of the American public supports impeachment. University of Virginia professor Larry Sabato.
That is a significant change from the last impeachment that we had. What it doesn't mean is that Trump's presidency will end early. We are so partisan now in the United States, and our polarization by party is so intense that really impeachment is not even a power anymore. It doesn't work.
But the historic vote does place Trump in a small group of U.S. presidents forever remembered for facing the ultimate disapproval of lawmakers. While Democrats' passage of articles of impeachment requires a trial of Trump in the Republican-majority Senate early next year, he will almost certainly be acquitted and stay in office.
Republicans were never going to expel Trump, but it's a warning to President Trump. Whether he serves one more year as president or five more years as president, it's going to remind him of what can happen when you go too far.
Despite the expectation Trump will remain in office, impeachment is a rare moment in U.S. political history and now a permanent mark on the record of President Trump. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell rebuked the House Thursday for its vote on the articles of impeachment.
Leader McConnell is plotting the most rushed, least thorough, and most unfair impeachment trial in modern history. His plan to prevent House managers from calling witnesses to prove their case is a dramatic break from precedent. We heard a lot about precedent from the leader. Never has there been a presidential impeachment trial in which the majority prevented the House managers from fairly presenting their case, to have witnesses explain their knowledge of the alleged malfeasance.
That was actually Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer responding to McConnell. Here is McConnell.
Only one outcome will preserve core precedents rather than smash them into bits in a fit of partisan rage because one party still cannot accept the American people's choice in 2016. It could not be clearer which outcome would serve the stabilizing, institution-preserving, fever-breaking role for which the United States Senate was created, and which outcome would betray it. The Senate's duty is clear. The Senate's duty is clear. When the time comes, we must fulfill it.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi has indicated that she may not send the articles of impeachment immediately to the Senate until she knows more about the trial environment. Now, in Catherine Gibson's report, we heard from the University of Virginia's Larry Sabato. He says U.S. presidents have become more controversial in the past few decades because they have rarely been elected with a clear majority of the total vote.
It isn't an accident, I don't think. You know, Bill Clinton was elected with 43%, and he didn't get 50% in his reelection race. That mattered. He won the popular vote compared to the other candidates, but there was a three-way race. George W. Bush obviously lost the popular vote. He wasn't impeached, but his presidency became very controversial. And Donald Trump now lost the popular vote by 3 million. He's being impeached, and he has by far the most controversial presidency in modern times. These are not good signs for the American Republic. They do suggest that despite economic prosperity in many respects, not all respects, we're still unhappy. We're still unsatisfied. We still don't believe that the system is working the way it should. And again, that ought to be a flare fired into the sky, visible to all. But apparently, most people aren't getting the message, and that worries me more than anything else.
Sabato says that impeachment may help the Democrats in the 2020 election, but that depends on who they pick as their nominee. If the Democrats pick poorly, Sabato asserts the race will not be close. Just who will be the Democratic Party nominee? Well, that's up for debate, which, by the way, there is a debate tonight in California where seven candidates will take the stage to make their case. Pakistan says that rival India has deployed, among other escalatory steps, medium-range missiles in the disputed Kashmir, allegedly to stage a cross-border military attack and harm regional peace. Earlier, I spoke with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad to learn more. Ayaz, can you let us know what has been alleged and what do we really know about the allegations about these missiles being deployed?
Well, today in Pakistan, an unusual statement was issued by the foreign ministry, Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi. It was a video statement, and what he said was that the Pakistani intelligence agencies have reported that there has been a massive military movement along the line of control in Kashmir, which divides the Himalayan region between India and Pakistan, and that even Indian military has deployed medium-range missiles. So what the foreign minister of Pakistan said, that he has written a letter to the United Nations Security Council informing the council about this dangerous escalation that he says could be an attempt to launch an attack against Pakistan.
Ayaz, can you do us a favor and walk us back a few months to tell us how we got here?
Well, this is basically, these current tensions stem from the steps that the Indian government took in August when it basically unilaterally changed the status of Kashmir and made it part of India, whereas Pakistan has consistently said that the fate of Kashmir has to be decided by the United Nations Security Council, that it remains a dispute under the Security Council resolutions. But India went ahead with it, and that's when, you know, Pakistan immediately downgraded its diplomatic ties with India, although they were already, you know, facing a lot of challenges, the relationship. But since then, we have seen constant statements back and forth between military officials and political leaders in both the countries about some kind of a dangerous escalation taking place, particularly in Kashmir, and that Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan has repeatedly warned that it could lead to a war and that could, you know, escalate into a nuclear exchange between the two countries. So we have been seeing this escalation, but whatever happened has happened over the last 24 hours is significant, because first, the Indian military chief, in a statement on Wednesday, said that there could be an escalation in tensions with Pakistan in Kashmir anytime. And that was sort of an alarm, you know, for Pakistan. And maybe Pakistan already knew about the steps that India has taken. So that's why today Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi went ahead.
Of course, all of this is taking place under a communications blackout for those that are in Kashmir, pretty much since all this began a few months ago.
And Pakistan has been consistently demanding and urging the world community to you know, pay attention to this issue and force India to lift this blockade. And that is why this Pakistan trying to internationalize this dispute with India over Kashmir has obviously annoyed India, which has consistently maintained that both the countries have to resolve this issue bilaterally rather than going to any international forum. So India is not happy and Pakistan is not happy, and both countries have already fought three wars, two of them over Kashmir, and we once again see quite a dangerous escalation with latest claims of Pakistan that even medium-range missiles India has deployed in Kashmir for some kind of, you know, preparation for a conflict with Pakistan.
Ayaz Gul is in Islamabad. Thank you very much for joining us. The protests that have swept India enters its second week. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government is refusing to budge on a controversial citizenship law that has sparked demonstrations. Reuters' Matthew Laratonda has more.
Hundreds of people have been arrested in parts of India, and authorities are imposing internet blackouts in an effort to stem the mass protests that have rocked the country for the past week. The government's refusing to budge on the controversial immigration law that sparked the unrest. In the capital, New Delhi, and some other regions, a ban on public gatherings has also been put into effect to keep the protesters from organizing. Some flights have been canceled. Prime Minister Narendra Modi's law expedites the path to citizenship for immigrants of certain religions, including Christianity and Hinduism. He says it's designed to help protect those worshippers from persecution in neighboring countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan. But it doesn't include Muslims, which has critics crying foul in a country that has long cherished its diversity and secular constitution. It also caps a string of other policy decisions from Modi that opponents claim amounts to a Hindu's first agenda.
And that was Reuters reporter Matthew Laratonda. And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
University of Copenhagen researchers have extracted a complete human genome from 5,700-year-old chewing gum. They say it's the first time an entire ancient human genome has been extracted from anything other than human bones. The chewing gum, which is actually pitch or tar extracted from a birch tree, was found during archaeological excavations in southern Denmark. The scientists say they were also able to extract DNA from oral microorganisms and key human pathogens. After analyzing the genome, the scientists found that the ancient gum chewer was a female and was more closely related genetically to people from mainland Europe than those who lived in Scandinavia at the time. The genome also revealed that she probably had dark skin, dark hair, and blue eyes. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Thursday that the World Anti-Doping Agency's four-year ban for Russia from international sporting competitions for doping was not justified.
Мне кажется, что это все, что я сказал, дает все основания полагать, что это решение.
He said bans should be handed out on an individual and not a collective basis, and he also said that the decision was political and not fair. Putin made the comments during his annual press conference. The state TC channel Russia 24 said about 1,900 journalists from Russia and abroad have been accredited to attend the event. In 2018, that event took almost 4 hours. Prime Minister Boris Johnson signaled an end to Britain's era of Brexit deadlock on Thursday, announcing a pact legislative program intended to take the United Kingdom out of the European Union on January the 31st, overhaul everything from fishing to financial services, and shore up the country's cash-starved public services. Australia's most populous state declared its second emergency in as many months, on Thursday as extreme heat and strong winds stoked scores of uncontrolled brush fires, some on Sydney's doorstep. Reuters' Libby Hogan has that story.
Australia's raging bushfires have sparked a state of emergency in New South Wales on Thursday. That's where major city Sydney is located. Extreme heat and hard winds have fanned massive flames there. Aerial video showed houses on fire in Sydney's southwest. New South Wales is the country's most populated state, and over 100 wildfires are burning across it. State leader Gladys Berejiklian says the state of emergency will last 7 days.
This is the second state of emergency we've declared since the fires commenced in July, the first being from the November 11th for that week where we experienced catastrophic weather conditions.
A state of emergency gives firefighters broad powers. They can now force evacuations, close roads, and shut down power or water. This is the same week the Australian continent logged its hottest day on record. A nationwide heat wave is forecast to top a blistering 40 degrees Celsius. That's 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Australia's been battling wildfires across its east coast for weeks, which have left 6 people dead and incinerated 3 million acres of bushland. Meanwhile, in Sydney, smoke has settled into a thick blanket over the skyline, grinding many outdoor activities to a halt.
And that was Libby Hogan from Reuters News Agency. For the first time, the World Health Organization, or WHO, reports the number of men smoking around the world has dropped, indicating measures to end the global tobacco epidemic are paying off. Lisa Schlein has those details.
World Health Organization officials call this a major shift in the fight against tobacco, which every year kills more than 8 million people prematurely. Data from 143 countries shows a decline in tobacco use for the first time among men, following a steady rise in the use of this deadly product during the past 2 decades. During this period, WHO reports 60 million of the world's nearly 1.4 billion smokers have quit the habit. Most of these reductions have been driven by women. However, WHO's Director of Health Promotion, Rudiger Kretsch, says male use of tobacco over the same period has risen by about 40 million.
But now we are seeing for the first time a decline in use, with WHO projecting that there will be at least 2 million fewer males using tobacco in 2020 and 5 million less by 2025. Fewer males using tobacco products means fewer people will suffer the avoidable pain and death that they cause.
Kretsch says the decline in tobacco use shows tobacco control measures work. He says steps such as taxation, banning advertising and marketing, as well as smoking in public places and plain packaging of tobacco products discourage people from smoking. The report finds approximately 43 million children aged 13 to 15 smoke, with boys using tobacco at twice the rate as girls. It says Southeast Asia has the highest rates of tobacco use, while Sub-Saharan Africa has the lowest. WHO says most gains in reducing tobacco use have been made in low- and middle-income countries. While the Americas is the world's best-performing region, it says the European region has the slowest pace of decline in tobacco consumption. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest kinds of cancer there is because, well, it is almost always found too late. This cancer is hard to detect and symptoms only show up when the cancer is advanced. But as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, researchers are beginning to make inroads in this most difficult to diagnose disease.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has survived pancreatic cancer, not once, but twice. Hers was found early, which is rare. The pancreas is an important organ that produces insulin, a hormone that regulates the body's blood sugar. But the pancreas is hard to see. It's at the back of the abdomen, covered by the stomach and the liver. That's why doctors can't detect early tumors during routine physical exams. Dr. Somashekhar Krishna is an endocrinologist who says that's why only 9% of patients diagnosed with pancreatic cancer are alive 5 years after diagnosis.
The cancer doesn't produce any symptoms early on.
Patricia Beatty likes playing cards with her children. She went to the hospital with what she thought was a stomach virus. During a scan of her stomach, the doctor found a cyst.
He told me that that the cyst was there and that it was precancerous.
Pancreatic cancer develops in one of two ways. It either starts as a cancerous tumor or it starts when a cyst changes and becomes cancerous. The difference between a tumor and the cyst is that the tumor is firm, while a pancreatic cyst is filled with fluid. Cysts on the pancreas are common. Most are, fortunately, benign. Doctors can test fluid from inside the cyst, but it's hard to tell which cysts will develop into cancer. Cancerous tumors or cysts can be detected with sonograms or other diagnostic imaging tools, but imaging is so expensive it can't be used as a regular screening device. Dr. Krishna at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center led a study of a new diagnostic method that gives doctors a microscopic view of the cyst wall. He says his study showed this virtual biopsy is highly accurate.
We can diagnose cysts with the accuracy of 96% to 97%.
The procedure uses a tiny scope that emits a laser light to produce a cellular image of the inside of the cyst.
Looking at the wall, the pattern, the image pattern which comes from the cyst wall, which comes as a direct video feed in real time, we can conclude what the diagnosis is.
Krishna and others are training doctors at hospitals across the U.S. to use this new technology so they can more accurately diagnose precancerous cysts. This can save lives, but the procedure will only be used after an MRI or a sonogram is ordered for another reason, so the cancer will still grow silently in most people until it's too late to save them. Krishna told VOA that a blood test is the most logical way to find pancreatic cancer early. The problem is it hasn't been developed yet, although researchers are working on it. As for Patricia Beatty, she's cancer-free because this new diagnostic tool found her cyst before it became malignant and spread. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our production staff, producer Dan Brown, engineer Patrick Dea, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you very much for joining us. Don't forget, you'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news on our VOA News website. And with our mobile application, you can take our stories on the go with you anytime, day or night. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.